Köszönöm szépen, tisztelt hölgyeim és uraim! 1956-ban az édesanyám és az édesapám elmentek Magyarországtól, és elszöktek a kommunizmustól. Most 55 évvel később itt vagyunk, és beszélünk a tudományról és a szabadságról, and that's a huge change in the landscape of science. I'm going to be very brief in my talk. And there's my Twitter address. I'm going to tweet my talk. I figure if I do it in tweets, then we can end a little bit more quickly. But let me give you my conclusion at the beginning. This morning we talked a lot about global challenges and global solutions. And what I want to demonstrate to you in the area of global health, and it's just as applicable to other areas, is that the grand challenges approach, which I'll describe, is a form of global governance of science and innovation that can help us together tackle our common global challenges. That's the point I'm going to make. This slide and these pictures were widely circulated in many public media last week, shows us what's at the heart of the matter in global health. This is a child from the Horn of Africa who was rescued from the brink of starvation, refed, and this is the same child a few months later. This is what's at the heart of our discussions of science and humanity, and I just wanted to remind us of that. The Grand Challenges approach actually started 100 years ago with David Hilbert, the Grand Challenges in Mathematics, but it was resuscitated in 2003 by Bill Gates, and in the Grand Challenges in Global Health, which ultimately attracted $500 million of investment by the Gates Foundation and other partners. It was a very discovery science approach. The average grant size was $10 million. The 14 challenges are shown on this slide. There was a lot of progress, and I just want to use one example, which is that challenge, the challenge about controlling insects that transmit agents of disease, and particularly developing genetic strategies to deplete or incapacitate disease-transmitting insect populations. I was there in 2003, when we started this enterprise, and I can tell you that the science in that area was very sparse and not well coordinated. In a short 5 years, largely because of the collaborative nature of the Grand Challenge approach, we are now within reach of using genetic and non-genetic means, and I'm thinking about the work of Scott O'Neill and Wolbachia parasites, to disrupt the transmission of dengue fever and to disrupt the transmission of malaria by disrupting its transmission through the vector, through the mosquito. So that's an amazing amount of progress from these things, which are now called the Grand Challenges Classics. But there were also lessons learned. That was a very top-down exercise. The leadership was largely on the part of principal investigators from rich countries. To be fair, about a third of the research community was from the developing world, but 43 of the 44 projects were led by researchers from the industrialized world. As a result of that, around 2008, the Gates Foundation started a Grand Challenges Explorations program, small $100,000 grants, much lower barriers to entry, and so a lot more young people, a lot more people from the developing world. And this slide shows actually two of the investigators who reached the second phase, upscaling their $100,000 projects to $1 million. The one on the left is Fredros Okumu. You might remember Smelly Socks versus Malaria from the summer. He developed a device that attracts mosquitoes outside the house and kills them. Grand Challenges Canada co-funds his work with the Gates Foundation. The one on the right is Ranjan Nanda. You might have seen the announcement last week of the breathalyzer for tuberculosis, 7 volatile organic compounds that are essentially a fingerprint of tuberculosis, like a breathalyzer on a patient's breath. Again, we co-fund this with them. And what Grand Challenges Canada announced, building on the Grand Challenge Explorations model last week, was actually something we call Rising Stars in Global Health. And I will ask you to help us to transmit this. This is a request for proposal seeking to help support talented young innovators from lower and lower middle income countries to develop bold solutions with real world impact in the area of global health. We aim to give out 60 $100,000 grants over two cycles, and maybe 12 or so scaling of up to $1 million. You can see that the deadline is in March of 2012. This is focused on people within 10 years of a wide range of degrees, and what I would ask you to do is help us to get the word out to your younger colleagues in lower and lower middle income countries using that website, grandchallenges.ca, because we believe very seriously that young innovators especially need to be enabled to solve their own problems and those of their families and of their communities, and I'll come back to that message in a moment. The Grand Challenges approach then has been applied not only to the large-scale Grand Challenges classics, top-down a little bit, not only to the bottom-up Grand Challenges explorations, but also to specific fields. For example, in the field of maternal, neonatal, and child health. The picture on the left shows the launch of a program called Saving Lives at Birth, which focuses on the 72 hours around the time of delivery when sadly most of the 350,000 women who die every year die, and most of the and about 1.6 million children die just in that short time frame. Five partners, Grand Challenges Canada, Gates Foundation, the U.S. Agency for International Development, the Government of Norway, and the World Bank, came together to tackle that problem on a grand challenge on saving lives at birth. One website, one entry process, one peer review process. It's a good example of the global governance of science. And you can see Secretary Clinton, Melinda Gates, representatives from Norway and the World Bank in the picture on your left. On the right, that picture reminds us, this is a program called Saving Brains, that picture reminds us that it's not enough in global health to think about saving the lives of women and children, important though that may be. We also have to ask ourselves what those lives are like. And what that picture on the right is about is Annie, there held by Carly Silver, who's a program officer in Grand Challenges Canada. And Annie is one of 200 million children in the world whose brain is knocked off by the time they're two and locked in by the time they're five, from poor nutrition, from infection, from lack of parental stimulation, from preterm labor and delivery. And those 200 million children do worse in school, have lower employment rates, have lower wages when they are employed. Think about how much we focus on talent and innovation in this audience. Well, imagine if for 200 million children the game is over by the time you're five. It's a fantastic way, if you were an evil scientist, to lock a poor country into poverty, and that's what we're doing. So in Grand Challenges Canada, we're actually using imaging, just like the pictures you showed, and other techniques to try and better understand that problem and scale what's known. This slide just shows that one needs to embrace a broad range of technological, social, and business innovation, something we call integrated innovation, if you're actually going to be able to tackle these global challenges and have sustainability and scale and result in lives saved and improved. What you will have noticed is a strong emphasis on infectious disease, but actually one of the things that's sneaking up on many developing countries is the area of non-communicable disease. And just like there was a Grand Challenges approach to identifying challenges in mostly infectious disease in those original Gates Grand Challenges, there have been processes in non-communicable disease and in mental health. At the moment, Grand Challenges Canada with other partners, the Global Alliance for Chronic Disease, has invested $25 million in hypertension implementation research in the developing world. This is about saving people from having strokes that they don't have to have. And we just invested $20 million in service delivery and stigma and improved access in treatment in the most neglected of the neglected diseases, global mental health, which is a huge burden on families and communities in low and middle income countries. But it's not enough to just support science. At the end of the day, there's two great ways to make sure a poor country stays poor, and those are the two ways we have to reverse. One I've already mentioned, which has to do with the brains of children, and I was fascinated by the pictures that you showed and the infant brains. Imagine what the brains of those 200 million children look like. That's the best way. The second best way is just to make sure that none of the ideas and innovations of young people turn into goods and services that can help their families and communities, and that's actually also what's happening. So think about the problem of vaccination campaigns and all the waste that's generated from syringes. That's Moses Musazi from Makerere University. He's developed a prototype incinerator for medical waste, which he's proudly showing that doesn't require fuel, but it never gets beyond the prototype stage because he doesn't have access to capital, and more importantly, he doesn't have access to mentoring. On the other side of that picture is a company like A to Z Textile Mills, which is shown on the right side of this slide, and that makes bed nets for malaria, shown in the insert. This is a company that is the largest manufacturer of bed nets in Africa, makes about 25 million bed nets, and employs 6,000 people, most of them women. So imagine a world where there's 100 companies like A to Z across Africa, and what a different changed landscape would be. That's also a grand challenge that we and others are tackling by bringing tools of social finance to the area of science and innovation. In closing, what I would like to say is to return to my theme, that what Grand Challenges is most fundamentally is a global governance model for science that can help different groups, public and private, in different countries, cooperate and tackle global challenges together. Think about that example of saving lives at birth, with five actors from three countries and a multilateral working together, including public entities, two of them funded by foreign aid, and Grand Challenges Canada is funded by Canada's foreign aid envelope by the Government of Canada, two of them funded by foreign aid, a private entity, the Gates Foundation. It's a platform to bring people together. So Bill Gates' G20 paper was already mentioned, and those triangular partnerships. So imagine a world where not just the Gates Foundation, Grand Challenges Canada, development agencies like USAID, and multilateral organizations like the World Bank are partners in these Grand Challenges enterprises, but imagine a Grand Challenges India, imagine a Grand Challenges Brazil, imagine a Grand Challenges China. In fact, these entities, these engagements are very close to becoming, becoming reality, to turn innovative ideas into global health and development impact. This actually is the pipeline of Grand Challenges initiatives, of which I only showed you a few. And I don't want you to sort of look in detail at this slide, but I want to give you the impression that that model of Grand Challenges is being extensively used in a whole pipeline of initiatives in global health, with a whole panoply of partners coming together to solve global challenges together. Most fundamentally, it's a model for the global governance of science. I also want to say that there are many groups who are starting to extend this model beyond health into other applications, like one on reading is going to be announced by USAID and World Vision tomorrow in the education sphere, and other groups are working in agriculture, in water, in energy and climate, to apply the Grand Challenges model, to identify Grand Challenges, and apply this model of collaboration to tackle those global challenges. Since I only took 12 minutes and everyone else took 20, I thought in exchange you could buy our book that describes the, that was a joke, that describes this movement over the last 10 years, and this slide shows you how you can get it. So I think I helped us catch up a little bit in time, Chairman. And very delighted for the attention. And what I said in the beginning, who doesn't speak Hungarian here? Anyone doesn't speak Hungarian? If you don't speak Hungarian, raise your hand. What I said in the beginning, just in closing, is that in 1956, my parents left Hungary and fled communism. And here we are, 55 years later, talking about science, talking about knowledge, and talking about its links to freedom. And for that, I want to congratulate Professor Palinkas and the Hungarian Academy of Sciences. And I want to thank all of you for allowing me to make this personal return journey. Thank you very much.